So klingt frische Musik. Und so klingt frische bei Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche rote Tafeläpfel aus Deutschland. 2 Kilo für nur 1,79 Euro. Oder Mini-Roma-Rispentomaten 300 Gramm für nur 1,11 Euro. Entdecke viele weitere Angebote zum Aldi-Preis. Und weiter geht's mit frischer Musik für jeden Geschmack. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Hitler, Roswell, JFK, cryptozoology and NSA, global warming and 11 government lies, tell them all about it, those conspiracy guys.
Hello, this is Gordo, and you're listening to Those Conspiracy Guys, and we're sitting here in a beautiful hotel in the city of Barcelona, in Catalan Spain, with a tour guide and Texan.
And Texan, yes, sir.
And Texan, Alvaro Garza, who lives here in the city and is a tour guide. And if you want to know anything about Barcelona or the surrounding regions, this is the man to be talking to. Welcome.
Great to Thank you very much, Gordo. A pleasure being here. It's a late night. I kind of enjoy this.
It's late at night, man. We've been burning the midnight oil here. Yeah. Solving the problems of the world, discussing some shit.
And creating new ones.
And creating new problems new solutions. But exactly. The way I found you yesterday and today, I was looking up, I typed into Google was the most amazing Spanish podcast. And it overlooked all the ones in the Spanish language, went straight to your one. Uh-huh. So tell us a little bit about your podcast before we start.
So the name of my podcast is Uncommon Tourist, and the idea came to me while living here in Spain that, there really is not an American perspective on a person living in Barcelona.
And what the world needs is more American perspective.
That's all we need. That's all we need is more American, because there's not enough. Yes, imperialism hasn't worked well enough. Yeah. We need more of us all over the place to
like a cultural cancer. That's what exactly. No, I think that there's a lot of these. Like as I go through my podcast analytics, I'm looking through the world podcast stuff. Mm-hmm. Right, there's so many podcasts from all over these countries that I am in the Those Conspiracy Guys is in the charts of this country. Like we're like in the top 30s in like fucking Sweden. Mm-hmm. I've never listened to a Swedish podcast because it's in Swedish. And there's so much stuff that English speaking people are missing out on.
Yeah, of course.
In culture, in history, in entertainment. And because those people aren't speaking English, it doesn't show up in your feeds, doesn't show up in your list. You can't even search for that shit.
Right.
So it is nice to have a quote unquote westernized view, maybe an anglicized view of a culture that has a different language. And we've learned that from talking with Kevin in Munich and with the lads from History in the Netherlands podcast in Holland. Like there's so much stuff, and if you can speak the language, you're obviously of Latin descent.
Yes, I'm as beautiful brown as they come, yes.
And you came over here looking for money or looking for love?
Love found me in Texas. So it's always a funny story because people ask me whenever they see me, they're like, wait, hold on 1 second. You speak Spanish, which I do, at least with a Mexican accent, but I look Latin. I'm brown, obviously, proud of it. But I talk like this.
Yeah.
So first of all,
hola y'all.
Hola y'all. So first of all, it comes out that I have an American accent, which absolutely throws everyone off. And then I tell them I'm from Texas, and then they go, oh yeah, Texas, guns, cowboy hats, boots, riding horses, and I'm like,
big walls.
Yeah, exactly. And
police brutality.
It's okay. Stereotypes, some of them are true. And in this case, yeah, I'm just one of those guys that, and on top of that, I'm also come from another strange perspective because I'm what we call ourselves Tejanos. So what Tejanos are people that kind of have a foot in Mexico and
Tex-Mex,
yeah, and have a foot in the United States, and kind of culturally belong to both. So we have.
I should look at this in Texas, like old Mexico.
Oh, absolutely. Look at the names of Texas. Yeah. You know, San Antonio, El Paso. Exactly. Yeah. Hey, we thought about that at the same time. Yeah. Well, it's probably on both of our minds. So God bless our people of El Paso.
Exactly.
because we're recording. What's today's date? Well, I don't know.
I think it's like the 9th.
Yeah, so we're, 3 days ago, Texas was in the news.
Yeah,
but
we're not talking about any false flag shootings on this one.
No, we won't.
You're good.
But yeah, a lot of those names are Spanish because they came from Spain. Mm. Texas was Spain. Most people don't realize.
And so was California and New Mexico.
So was California, yeah. So when people here, most Spanish people don't understand that. Because I explain, because my name is Alvaro, my name is Garza, or here they would say Garza with the theta.
And the English is Albert Garci?
Yes.
Hey, Albert.
I won't even go into all the names I've been called. I love you, Mom. So so it's very hard to explain. My name is Alvaro, my last name is Garza, but I'm from Texas, and most people, and like most Americans, don't understand American imperialism or the influence that we have on the rest of the world.
Yeah.
Neither does Spain, neither does this generation realize the influence that Spain had on Latin America. And when you really start digging in to what we see and what we know now that came from Spain.
We're talking really like 500 years ago, a little thing called, Spanish imperialism.
Spanish imperialism,
Imperialism.
Portuguese, yeah.
You're taking over North Africa, a lot of South America, sending over lads looking for the West Indies, and Plymouth Rock landed on us or whatever.
Absolutely.
They ended up colonizing, taking in slaves, I think purposefully inoculating those or infecting those people with diseases to
sneezing out to loud, which they still do in Spain,
to lower the population so they can get the land, they can get the raw materials, and leaving their language and culture behind, which has grown into something completely else.
Right. Yeah.
I do think there was though. Was there not like cultures that were already in, like the area we now know as Mexico or Central America? And then in South America, that were, I guess, would you call them Latin? Like, is there a mix? Like, there was a language brought over, but they already had that Latin flavor.
You know, a lot of them were, we would call them Native Indians, right? So okay. They were just people, and it depends on what history book you read. How did they arrive in Mexico? It's been theorized that some have come from China. So that is where,
and so, like Southeast Asia,
India, and stuff like that. We're talking about the Continental Bridge that they had made their way from the north and came down and settled in the south. They have their own culture, and it's really interesting being Latin, because it's this strange dichotomy of, hold on, I'm Catholic. Hold on, I speak this language. Hold on, I go to that church. But then, when people realize that one half of their culture, one half of their race raped the other half of their race, it creates a love-hate relationship. And depending on where you go in Latin America, some people won't even say that they're speaking Spanish. They will say that they're speaking Castellano. And that is because they don't want to make a reference to Spain and what they did to some Latin American countries.
Like in Ireland, we're forced to speak English.
Right.
It's like ashes in our mouths. But most of us don't want to learn the native tongue, or it's not really used functionally on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
So we should be speaking Irish, technically. But we were, policed into Anglicization. So if anyone was caught speaking Irish, you'd be arrested, or you'd be killed or whipped, or whatever the English would do to you, ride up the arse or whatever, until you'd be speaking English. You know? I think it's very weird that in countries like Brazil, or like Chile and Argentina would be two very geographically close, but two racially and culturally so different. Like Argentina is more of kind of a Germanic or a white-based culture. And then Chile seems to be very like native in their complexions, their hair, the bloodlines still kind of are of the original indigenous peoples.
Yeah.
And then with a little flavor of kind of Spanish Latin flavor. Brazil is such a melting pot.
Oh, wow. Right. Isn't it? Those like beautiful people in the world.
In the south, where it wasn't so hot. All the white people went because it's too hot up there in Bahia.
Yeah.
And then the African slaves that were brought over to the Americas, they all settled in the north. It was lovely and clammy. And, it's almost like a gradient as you go from north Brazil down to the bottom in kind of skin color. A lot of that stuff came from conquests of Spain, and the people who took over Spain then went, well, we have Spain, what else is there?
Right.
And you're a historical tour guide, you're talking about the history of of Spain, but mostly of Catalonia.
Yeah.
And so, that's had its own oppressive background as well, right?
It has. You know, and it's interesting because as I speak to Catalans, a lot of them will say, no, you know, we talk about how the Spanish did conquer a lot of Latin America, but the Catalans will say, no, we weren't a part of that. We didn't really play a part of
that. We were over here on the East Coast just chilling.
Yeah, that was from the south of Spain, right? Mm-hmm. That's where that went. And I really can't accept that because Queen Isabella was here in Barcelona, right? So
Barcelona was the de facto capital for a while.
Yes. And it's moved around Spain, obviously, as different kingdoms that were over different areas and, you know, all would be their capitals. So it's I don't really accept that wholeheartedly. I think that as a country as a whole, that they all had their influence. And Christopher Columbus did come back here. I mean, so we can't...
Celebrating. He's on lad's shoulders.
He's like, hey, look what I found. Look at this. Check this out. Look at this.
I have what we call a potato. What about...
tomato.
Tomatoes.
No, both, actually.
You say tomato, I say tomato. What do you feel like when you're in Spain as a Tex-Mex American? Like,
it's actually pretty cool.
Do people know you're Spanish? Can you understand Catalan? Are you like... now a fish out of water, or do you just like slap in right with the Spanish? And is there a Mexican accent going on? What's happening?
Oh yeah, totally Mexican accent. Yeah, they know. As soon as I speak Spanish, they're like, foreigner. But it's true. So after we get over the conversation of where you're from, why you're named Alvaro, why your last name is Garza, which are Spanish, it's funny. Because I can trace my bloodline back to 1583 when the first Garza showed up in the south of Texas. So for me, it's really exciting, actually. I'm a lover of history, so.
That's amazing you go back so far.
Yeah. And there's a whole website created to the first Garza del Falcón that was done by the Corpus Christi Library. And there's a lot of Garzas in South Texas. There's a lot of Garzas in Mexico, and 98% of those all came from the same forefather.
Does Garza mean anything? Like, is it a...
Yes, it does. It means a bird, heron.
Okay.
So, and then you'll have some arguments of, well, that's a Jewish name, making reference to an animal. So there is a Jewish line in there somewhere as well. But, so, for me, as a Texan, have a lot of family in South Texas, it's interesting for me because I kind of enjoy it. It's really cool because it turns out that my kids are Texan Catalans now. So they're Tex-Cats instead of Tex-Mex.
Right.
So for me, it's exciting as a lover of history. Yeah. No, it is really interesting for me to come back to a place and realize that a lot of the traditions, like I touched on earlier, that where they come from and you know, the way we do, the siestas, the kind of foods that we eat, the traditions that we have.
These my roots.
Yeah. It really is. And those are deep, deep, deep roots. Now, I cannot deny I love the Mexican side. But then as a Texan, I also have to admit I love my Texas side too, that we were our own country for a while, 7 years, and then we became part of the United States. So I'm as American as apple pie, but like I said, we from the south of Texas or Tejanos in Texas, we have our feet on both sides.
And yeah, so, it's an amazing cultural mix.
It really is. And then, you know, you can look at it from my American side here. And when I am here, you know, looking at Barcelona specifically from my specific American perspective.
Yeah.
You know, I mean that socially.
You're politically. Like, I see opportunities to make business
everywhere. It's all over the place.
I'm like, between 1 p.m. and 3 p.m., there's nobody making any money in this motherfucker. No. Let's open up a bunch of Starbucks only open for 2 hours a day.
Exactly. Boom. That's it. They all come in. That's the way it works here. Today is August something. And we're in the process of everyone going on vacation.
We're in Italy last week. Every cunt is on holidays.
Everything. It's like, can I get this done? No, we have summer hours. But where are you going?
It's like, you know that people go on holidays in the summer, motherfucker. Like, you're a holiday place. Where are you all going?
Exactly.
We're going on holidays too.
Drives me crazy.
Go in October. It's cheaper.
Hey, my wife's name is Anna. My beautiful wife named Anna. And I said, hey, let's go do this. Right now, what time is it? It's 3 o'clock. Are they open? I don't know. To call them, I don't know. They're not picking up. I don't know.
There is a whole element of I find it's kind of like an attitude of mañana.
Yeah.
It's like,
mañana.
I've only been here a little while. And is that the same in Mexico where it's like, we'll do it later, man?
Yeah.
So don't worry about it.
So that is my perspective, right? I'm looking at this from an American perspective. It's like, why is this not going on? I want it now. I want it done now.
Yeah.
And mañana is very easy.
I'm not going to lie to you. I fell in that lifestyle very easily.
Procrastinazione.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Let's take it easy. But it's also, as an American, really made me rethink the way we live. Mm. We live on the go, 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 go.
Yeah, it's high octane shit, man.
Yeah, and like I live on stressful. The beach. Well, I live down the street from the beach.
I live on the beach. No, got a lovely mat and a tinfoil thing they pull over me at night time.
So I had to rethink this. Like, do I really want to go work or do I want to go hang out on the beach? Mañana's still going to be here.
Mm. It's that like 1967 California beach vibes. Like, hey man, it's all good, man.
It's all good. Chill, relax.
But they made a country out of it here, I found. Is there a culture shock when you were coming over here? You're looking at how people do things. Like the history, obviously, is super interesting. Mm-hmm. You're back in touch with your roots. You can see where, you know, your great uncle Hernando got his weird fucking way of doing that shit that he does with the custard and the cream, and you have to do the blowtorches. Like, I made these for you, Alvaro, from the old country.
Same with you, like, gracias, tío.
Is there like a culture shock?
There is not so much a culture shock because I get it, but there is an American way of doing things that I'm used to. Because I'm a pretty open guy. Culturally, I think maybe the first couple of times I came, I learned how a funeral was set up, different than what we do in the United States. The first time I came, I learned that we eat at 2, not at 12. And by the way, we have the rest of the afternoon to kind of hang out. And then we get going at 5.
Like midnight.
Yeah. And actually, I learned while here why this is a late culture. And I was really surprised when I found out one of the reasons why, and I'll tell you in a second. But then, you know, having to get used to that, or my kids going to sleep at 10 or 11 o'clock at night, what? We don't do that in the States. So I really am just, and it still grinds on me. Sometimes I'm like, we need to do this now because the kids need to go to bed. Mm. It's like, no, man, take it easy. My wife says, take it easy. The kids are going to go to bed when they go to bed. All right. So, yes, there is that shift in clock. And by the way, we'll get into this conversation later, I know, but I'm going to tell you this little fact because it's really crazy. For those of us that don't know, Spain is an hour behind everything, and it has to do with Franco.
Right. So Spain is on GMT.
Yes, we should be with London and Portugal, but we are with Eastern Europe.
Right.
So that kind of turns the clock 1 hour, right, difference. And then you add daylight savings, thank you. And you switch it, now you're 2 hours, right? So we eating at 10 o'clock is really like eating at 8.
Right.
So this is partly has to do with daylight saving times and has to do with Franco. And because Franco's friends were Hitler and Mussolini, they were on Eastern European time. Well, to show solidarity with those two quacks, he turned the clock to be in time with them.
Is Portugal the same time?
No.
Portugal's
on GMT, same as London.
Fucking bizarre.
I know, crazy, right? And I was like, what?
There was something a couple of years ago where they were actually going to abolish GMT and make it, instead of having it like in those weird formations, just have it a dead straight line and Ireland and England and Portugal and I think the Canaries and some other countries in that line, they were all going to jump forward and we're going to have like a mean European time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Still hasn't happened yet.
What I'm more concerned about is why the hell don't you get rid of something that was put in place by the dictator?
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
Right, it's like, oh, we like that. No, we don't.
Yeah, but then that's just a policy change. But then you're going to have to go like, okay, look, let's get rid of the Autobahn and let's get rid of fucking Volkswagen and let's, you know.
Yeah.
Once you start picking at that scab, it's very hard to...
Yeah, so this is why I created my podcast. It's because of
There's so much stuff there.
So much. There's so much. I mean, and it's the little things. It's not the big things. It's those little things that make it interesting and why I just decided to say, hey, why not? Let's do this. Let's have some fun with it.
And the name of the podcast again?
Is Uncommon Tourist.
And you're on iTunes at the moment. There's a teaser episode.
Yes.
And you're working on the first bunch.
Yeah, it'll be out in a couple of days.
So go and subscribe to that.
I appreciate it. It's about St. George.
I'll put the link in the description below for those conscientious podcast
all right
listeners.
I appreciate it.
So your favorite parts of the history of Spain as you give your tours, like where do you usually conduct your, because you're a real life tour giver, you're like a walk and talk, Look over here, and on your left.
Right.
You do it in Spanish and English?
Primarily in English.
Okay.
Yes. I can do it on special occasions. We'll do it in Spanish, but primarily in English, yes.
Right. I feel there would be a big market for a lot of, like, Tejicanos?
Tejicanos?
Is that right? Tejicanos?
Tejanos?
Tejanos.
Tejanos, yes.
A lot of Tejanos or even Mexican people to come on holiday to go, like, back to the old country. You know, like, they have a bunch of, like, Jewish kids in America every year. They get gifted a bunch of money to go back and to live in Israel for a month, 2 months or whatever.
Right.
They call it something like, there's some, it's not like a Rumspringa, but like that kind of version for Jewish kids. Maybe we'll do a thing for Mexican kids and get them to come back to Spain to be like, it's not the big bad wolf that you think it is. Come over, have a look, see where you come from, see what your roots are.
Yeah.
Might put them down somewhere. So like your favorite parts of history that you teach in these tours, primarily in Barcelona?
Primarily in Barcelona, and then we'll take a tour up to the north. We'll go up to Girona, which, speaking of Jewish history, they have a huge Jewish history there as well, but now has become more famous because of the Game of Thrones.
Mm.
Yeah, and we'll go
Shame. That scene happened there, the burning, the season 8, burning of the village, burning of the city.
So you're looking at Girona.
So it's King's Landing and Braavos is filmed in Girona, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Fucking awesome, dude.
It is. So yeah, I mean, how where else in the world can you go? You know, come to Barcelona and go to Girona. It's only an hour north, so.
Even I saw a picture of Girona today looking it up, and even the front of the Septern that exploded in season 5, I think.
You saw it.
And the big massive steps that your one from Highgarden walks down.
Right.
That's like a real church in Girona.
Yeah, and in that church as well, that church at its time when it was built was an architectural marvel because no church had span so wide.
Right.
Right. There are no major buttresses there to counterweight the size of the walls. So Girona is famous for that church specifically.
Cool.
But it's a large climb of stairs and it's really awesome to be there.
It looks great.
Well worth it. So we go there, we go south, we go to Montserrat, which is up about 25 kilometers from here.
And there's a monastery in Montserrat.
Where the Jesuits were started, yeah.
We will be doing an episode on the Jesuits.
Yeah.
I do want to do an episode on Catalonia and its and Spain and its history. We're doing a World War II series on those conspiracy guys as well, and one of those episodes is going to be about Franco's Spain and the nationalist takeover.
Well, you have plenty of fodder. There is so much to talk about, and you know, I'm looking forward to this podcast that you're going to do because the truth is, the Spanish Civil War, although has been documented, and we know that George Orwell was here and he did, based a lot of books and a lot of his experiences as a reporter here. It is a fascinating study of what happened in the Spanish Civil War and the fact that most people don't realize it. And part of it is also the taboo of the Spanish Civil War. People don't talk about it. We are of a generation right now that still many people can remember that their uncles were taken away, that they lost family members. And
you're talking mid 40s to like late 50s.
Oh, absolutely. That was the most brutal. Those were the most brutal years. Yes.
That's not that long ago.
No.
That's like 12 years of Kristallnacht, basically, was going on in Spain.
Yeah.
And that went on for a year and a bit in Germany until everyone went, okay, Adolf, you're the man, sound. We're not going to push against you.
Yeah,
he got rid of the SA. Like Franco was doing that here for 10, 12 years.
Yeah.
This was like running parallel with Stalin's purges, and Stalin was getting rid of all his detractors.
Yeah.
And Stalin and Hitler get all the fucking front page press. Franco, I think, is often forgotten because he ruled for so until so recently,
right
into the 70s.
Right.
And I think it's like because of how well Spain is doing now, relatively. And because of acceptance into the European Union and it's all, great football, like soccer teams, right. all this kind of stuff. Like it doesn't seem like it was as oppressed or as
it run doesn't, down. Yes. And also, although Hitler and Mussolini were Franco's friends, he did ask them to bomb this eastern side of Spain to help him out. Spain was neutral during the Second World War, so it doesn't get the attention that the Mussolinis or the Hitlers did. Of
not neutral, but even like stable. There was no conflict because it was just taken over without reprisal.
Correct.
There was nobody pushing back.
Yeah.
Whereas, like on the front, it was like France and the Allies, from France, Belgium, whatever, and the Allies against the Germans. But there was nobody down in Spain pushing back.
No, not
like the closest was the guys in Northern Africa pushing back against the Italians. But there was not in Spain's eyes.
Nope.
What's the name of that place? Cadiz.
Cadiz.
Like there was not Cadiz. There was nothing. There was nobody pushing back there.
Of course not.
Because they hadn't got over that far, and it was like, let Spain be Spain. It seems like it's so forgotten that he just got to do it all through the '50s and sixties as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Having a heyday.
It's bizarre.
It is bizarre, and that's another interesting thing about being here in Catalonia, is that the Catalans were not allowed to speak. So you know, every once in a while I run to someone, and I'll just kind of, if I feel comfortable with them and I understand that they feel comfortable with me, I'll have a conversation about what they experienced or if they could tell me any information, just out of curiosity and saying, I'm a lover of history. What do you know? It's rare that I find it, but every once in a while I will find someone that is willing to talk about it. And, you know, you learn crazy things about the Catalan language and the fact that in Catalonia, you were not allowed to speak Catalan.
So let's get into Catalonia then. Is that a big part of your tours? Is that a big part of the history of Barcelona, right?
Yes. It's
so Barcelona is like the principal city of Catalonia, of five sections as far as
your regions.
Five regions.
Four of them actually. This is the capital. Together. This is the capital of the state of Catalonia. During the Spanish, just to finish that thought, the Spanish Civil War, Catalonia was not allowed, or Catalans were not allowed to speak Catalan. Did they do so privately? Absolutely. I've had conversations with people that have said that in our house we spoke it, with our neighbors we spoke it, in our streets we spoke it, but then we also knew when to stop it.
Is it that much different to Spanish?
It's its own language. It's a cousin to Spanish as Portugal is a cousin to Spanish as French is it's a Latin based. Right. Romantic language, yeah. The Italians.
So Galician is similar Latin, but Basque is the only thing that's not.
That is not. And no one really knows the origins of where the Basque language comes from.
Basque is very similar in construction with like Finnish and Estonian, apparently. Is that right?
And they're saying references to Africa as well.
Right.
So I have no idea. I have no context on how to answer that correctly.
Yeah.
But Euskera, I'm not even sure how I'm pronouncing it, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. It is their own language and it's not Latin based. So it's very difficult for people like, you know, if you're listening to Italian, if a Spanish person is listening to Italian or Portuguese, you know, they can keep up because they're cousins. Well, Catalan's the same. Catalan is a cousin to Spanish and there are certain words. The most basic one is adios. In Spanish, we're looking at adios being go with God or of God. And then the Catalans say adeo. So be go with God, the same thing.
Just silent S.
Yes.
Because they don't like Spain.
And the funny thing is when the Catalans will acknowledge each other in the streets, they will just say deo, adeo, deo. And when you learn and you figure out and you translate that correctly, they're just saying to each other, God, God. God, and it's the most awkward thing when you realize it and you see it and you kind of chuckle to yourself. And it
sounds like a bunch of guys in New York like complaining in a deli. Oh God. So it's like Catalan then I think was like really pushed, like it's 1,000 years old, Catalonia.
The Catalan flag is one of, if not the oldest flag that has consistently been flown in Europe.
And the Spanish flag is a derivative of the Catalan flag.
The Catalan flag is part of, if anyone can kind of, I'm going to call it a logo or the emblem on the Spanish flag. It is one of the four quadrants that you see on that. And you have the Pillars of Hercules, and you know, these are the coat of arms.
If you think of an FC Barcelona jersey.
Absolutely. Very good.
So we get Catalan, we get the cross of St. George.
Yes. And below that, which by the way, I'm wearing my Barca jersey. So we're sitting here looking at it. On the left-hand side has basically three parts to it. Mm. The left-hand side, we have the Catalan flag, which is the gold and yellow with four red stripes. And then to the right of that, we have the St. George's cross, which is white and
or Red Cross. Most people will recognize it as being an English also flag. And then below that, you have a FCB, which stands for Football Club Barcelona. And then below that, you have the Blaugrana, they call it, which is a smaller version of the Catalan flag, but in the blue and the reddish color.
Maroonish
looking color, yeah. And it's pretty awesome. So it's,
Catalonia being like 1,000 years old as a declared region. So the Romans came first and they took over. Catalan culture, Catalan language, and Catalonia is geographically, possibly was there before that. We have no records of it in history. They say that it may be there, but the language was fully fledged 1,000 years ago.
Absolutely.
And then for 800 years until about 50 years ago, it was totally underground. So how the fuck did it, such a strong culture, geography, a history, a physical history and a cultural history and a language stay alive under Anne Frank levels of oppression, suppression and deletion? Yeah. They wanted to delete Catalonian language and culture from Spain until 50 years ago.
It says the Catalan people are very proud and they will fight tooth and nail to keep not only their culture, but their language strong.
They must have been teaching it to their grandkids and shit, because it's not allowed to be taught in schools.
Absolutely
and stuff.
Not. So yeah, of course. They taught at home privately, but not in schools. Now it's switched. My son is in, both my kids are now in schools here in Barcelona, and they're taught in Catalan.
Yeah.
And Catalan traditions are very poignant. Catalan traditions, there's one right now, it's very funny, where they're kind of fighting with Halloween because of Castañeda, which is going on right now, where they roast these chestnuts. Where you roast chestnuts and you sell them and you have this celebration. Happens to fall on October 31st. So there's this fight between this Catalan tradition and Halloween. And this is consistent with Christmas.
Is roasting chestnuts not a Halloween tradition anyway?
No.
The American Halloween comes from Ireland.
Yes. Yes, of course.
Yeah, so the way they celebrate American Halloween, the pumpkins and sweets and all, it's a Samhain, the festival of Samhain, which is a harvest festival. So surely the chestnuts part, was chestnuts more of a Christmas thing or is it a Halloween thing, what do you think?
No, it's absolutely, it has nothing to do with Halloween. It's just the Catalans themselves. So
do you have chestnuts in Halloween in America?
No, we don't.
No?
No, Christmas. Chestnuts?
Maybe. No, it's just that was just to the side. I thought maybe the way the Christmas tree is a Saturnalia. It's an ancient Roman thing that was taken into America.
The Yule
log and all that shit. Yeah.
So the Catalans have survived, just tooth and nail, still fighting. The War of Secession 300 years ago, when Carlos II died, he couldn't produce an heir. The Catalans thought that they would get away, and side with the Northern European Habsburgs.
The Austrian Empire.
The Austrian Empire, instead of siding with the Bourbons of the South.
Yeah.
And they did that hoping that they would win their independence.
So they had their own parliament, they had their own government at the time.
Yes. So
there's parliament and everything in Catalonia itself, and they were able to make decisions for the area. Until a certain time. So when did Spain become, after the 80 Years' War and after the Austrians tromping through Europe and after the Romans had their peace first, and then you're talking about...
The Visigoths were here after the Romans, and then after the Visigoths, where we get the word Gothic from, the Muslims had come up.
Yeah, so they took over the whole bottom half of Spain.
Yeah.
And then you had your Castilla de León, and you had different... So, Spain has been split and redivided and separated and moved.
Separate, fight that side.
But Catalonia, Galicia, and Basque have remained their own individual culture, language, and geography, even through all of those splits.
Through all of those splits, yes. Right. There's always been an undertone. Even if they were ruled by someone else, they've never lost their core culture.
That's amazing that is able to be done. To be able to stay in the same place and keep your culture. And keep, you can walk around the streets of Barcelona and see, buildings from that time that weren't, destroyed. Maybe, would you think, the Spanish overlords or the Austrian overlords had a bit of compassion for history? Because, when the Russians came through, they just... wiped everything out. When the Germans came over, they're like, oh yeah, you think that's your history? Not anymore, bitch. And you're just like wiping out old buildings and wiping out art and wiping out culture and history. Like, it was pretty seriously done. So the Spanish were maybe more compassionate towards the history of these areas, do you think?
I think that the Spanish, well, obviously, during the Spanish Civil War, no.
Right.
They wiped out a lot. And
but that was more of like of an ethnic slash cultural cleansing to homogenize Spain into one culture.
To only be Catholic and to only speak Spanish.
Yes.
Yeah. Picasso played a part of that, right? Because he self-exiled himself, but still was able to get some work done here, even in Franco's era. Yeah. So it's the Spanish, the Catalans specifically, and I'm speaking there from their perspective because we're here.
Yeah.
They had just consistently found ways to make it happen and keep the culture alive. And it's still true today. And they're still fighting for independence, which we'll get into here in a second, I know. But yeah, it's just a matter of just pure keeping our culture alive.
And I find as we travel down from Italy into southern France and then down through northeastern Spain, coming down into Barcelona along the coast, it was a very long transitional overlap between like Occitan French, southern French culture into like northern Spanish culture. So we were like well into Spain and we were stopping the place and people were still saying like bonjour, hola. Like it was a kind of a mix of the two,
right?
Like a Tex-Mex Frespan. So it's this like a really long overlap, like right the way down to Barcelona.
My favorite part of it, by the way, is when you go eat at a restaurant and you buy a sandwich, they'll ask you, do you want butter on your sandwich or do you want olive oil on your sandwich? I go with butter, by the way.
I go with both. Fuck out.
Yeah. So that's my favorite thing of that kind of, like you said, it's kind of a fluid border, right?
It is, A lot of the countries are like going from southern Germany into Italy.
Yeah, of course.
Like everything is Italian and German for a really long way either side of it. Austria as well, Swiss,
Italians.
Austria into France.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of open border carry on, a lot of cross cultural contamination. Yeah. And it's totally like normalized and accepted. And you can see different architectures and stuff like crossing over from France into Spain. The difference in the roadside trees and the vista and the quality of the roads really like as soon as we came into Spain it really changed.
Well, you have the natural border. You know, we have the Pyrenees Mountains, right? So Andorra is stuck up there in between, is underneath France and then above Spain. In Andorra, they speak Catalan, Spanish, and French.
Yeah.
So they touch all three of them.
It's a crazy mix. We were going to go there. We ran out of time on this trip. Like, that's a fucking weird place to have in the middle of Europe. That's never talked about.
Why were they never taken over by one side or the other, right? If Franco was so powerful, why would he not take over?
Must have, like, giant, like, snowy mountain men, warriors or something. Like, they have a natural protection from the mountains. Mm-hmm. But, like, nobody talks about Andorra. They don't have a football team. Mm-hmm. They don't have... Mm-hmm. People go there skiing. That's about it.
Well, skiing and up to recently, it was kind of like a place where people could also hide money.
Has it got its own principality, its own government?
I mean, it's its own country. And it's really strange.
Andorra and Liechtenstein, they're two you want to watch that.
You got to watch the little ones.
And
it's also interesting along the border. There are little towns on, for example, in France, there's a small town that belongs to Spain. And when you go into this small town that belongs to Spain, they adhere to the Spanish clock.
Oh, shit, that's got to be really annoying.
Right? And it's only in this small town. And then you go 20 kilometers south and you're in Spain. But this little town is just Spain inside France. Makes no sense, right?
That's really nice. And Spain has a lot of those little things. Like they have like Gibraltar, they have like the Canaries.
The Canary Islands. Yeah, to go with that. But Gibraltar belonging to England, right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you cross the border and you're speaking English. And you're just like, what the hell? What just happened? So Spain and it in general in Europe as a whole has these little things, right? Yeah. Well, we won't do this because of this treaty or this happened during this war and we won't do that and it's strange. And as an American, I look at that and I'm like, that's an interesting story. What's the history behind that?
Yeah, why I think people who live here and have seen it every day, they're just like, meh, that's just the way things are. I think sometimes, and being from Ireland where there's a lot of those little stories, like you wonder why this town is called this or why that thing is up there. Like, what's that thing on the front of that church? Ah, that's just the way it's always been, boss. It's right. Like, but why?
Yeah.
A lot of people, if you grow up with it, you become desensitized to it. You never ask.
Right.
So that's the wonder of, like, your American eyes with your Latin background, the ability to be able to speak the native language and also your fascination with history. That seems like a killer mix to come here to go like, okay, let's pull at this this thread of this jumper of Catalonia. Yeah. Let's see what's going on underneath. Like,
and it makes my, even when I go back to, for example, when I go back to Mexico, it makes things even more obvious than what they were previous before living here in Spain. I'm like, wow, okay, does anyone see what I'm looking at? And they're like, no. And so it's my own playground in my head, but I'm like, that is why that is like that. So it's...
I'm the ants man.
Tell them all about it, those conspiracy guys.
So for Catalonia, like during Franco's takeover, it was able to maintain its cultural independence, or not even independence, but like cultural identity.
Identity underground, yeah. Sub-identity, yeah.
Even through some serious carry-on. Like, I'm going to do a whole episode on the history of Spain, and I'm going to take in Catalonia, Basque Country, and Galicia, which are three really, really interesting microcosms of maintaining culture over adversity, right?
Yeah.
But Catalonia itself has had, like, a really tumultuous past with the politics of Spain, whoever was in charge. Or true?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? So because how are they not their own country yet, or how are they not now when these cultural acceptances, like you said, they're able to teach the kids through Catalan in school,
right,
there's no, like, you know, it's not like fucking Anne Frank shit like anymore, right, being Catalan. I'm Catalan, I'm proud, I'm out. How is that not already passed? How is that already, if they want that?
Right. You know, so Catalans want, well, I can't speak for all of them, obviously, but there is this movement to separate, and that movement has been around since the War of Secession, like I mentioned earlier.
So run us down the little War of Secession then, just a little bit. So I mean, when you explain that, just so the people know.
Okay, so the War of Secession started after Carlos II passed away. He was a blue blood, and was just inbred. And if, I encourage people to go and look him up on the internet and find a photo of him, because he looks a little inbred.
They nearly do. He's a Habsburg line, right?
Yes.
So Habsburg were...
Well, as you know, all the Habsburgs and the Bourbons were... Yeah. There were some cross lines. And but either way, when he passed away, when he died, he did not produce an heir because he couldn't. Let your imagination run wild.
His dick had too many holes in it.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was a problem, because whenever you can't produce an heir, who is going to claim Spain as their own? So everyone started taking shots at him and saying, well, we own it. No, because if you can't produce an heir, you go back, right? So you go backwards to figure out, okay, who's the cousin that was that cousin who married that cousin, and who owns this? And so the War of Secession, the Catalans saw it as an opportunity to not side with Spain proper and side with the Habsburgs of the North, hoping that if the Habsburgs of the North say, hey, you know what? We won, Catalans. You guys are good, and we appreciate you being on our side. You get your independence, you get your own region, you do what you want. Well, unfortunately, that wasn't the case. So when the Bourbons eventually would take over, would take Spain back.
Create those little wafer chocolate biscuits as a celebration.
Absolutely. Ooh, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every time we eat a Bourbon biscuit,
you're
celebrating the oppression of Catalonia.
Mm.
Just think about that.
So that's basically how Catalans not only got the screws to them, but the screws got tighter on them, as Madrid was not very happy when the Bourbons did take over. And there's a whole big history behind building a citadel in the middle of Barcelona to keep the Barcelonans down.
You see it on the top of the hill looking down over everybody, right?
Absolutely, yeah. It's now a park, but it used to be a citadel, and that was created specifically to keep the Catalans squashed. Keep extinguishing each little fire that you see. If they raise up, if they rise up and have something to say, if they rise up, start having a little fight, squash them.
And do you think, because Basque took no part in that as a cultural identity, do you think that if Catalonia had have sided with the Bourbons, that they would have got their freedom? From what I've read, I don't think so.
No,
No, absolutely not. Yeah. No, and this conversation leads up to money, really, right?
As most
everything is, right? So the crown of Aragon, around 1350-ish, started figuring out that they could make a lot of money off the port. Okay, so
Aragon was the eastern province that took up most of the eastern coast of Spain, down as far as the Costa Brava.
Costa Brava, right.
And then Basque was the only part of the north that wasn't included. Middle. So Aragon was like all Catalonia.
Yes.
All of the eastern coast all the way down to where the pointy bit starts to turn into the square bit at the bottom of Spain.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. Just for those listening.
So yeah, so the crown of Aragon, they figured out how to make money.
Yeah.
And so that is when they started building castles and they started building churches. And it's around that time period.
They were going all that stuff from the ports, like exactly. Taking all that.
Yeah. Now you're talking about money.
All the value, yeah. Venice did the same thing at the same time, right?
Exactly.
This Mediterranean business was big money.
Yes, exactly. So now we're talking money. And still today, we're talking about money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? Because the Catalans are saying, hey, you know what? We make the money here. We have our own language. We have our own culture. We really don't like those Spanish very much for what has happened historically, but also kind of the crazy things that they do to us. They make us pay more in taxes. We have toll roads that we have to pay for here. You exit Catalonia, you don't have toll roads anymore.
Fucking talk about toll roads, man. Drive across Europe and see how many toll roads you get.
So the Catalans, there's a crazy amount of debate and argument within the Catalans of what they should do. And it's a political hotbed. And it's so interesting for me as an American to see a democracy either budding, right? Because there is a chance, I guess you could debate yourself into independence. Or the flip side of that, of just being squashed and being a democratic country that just won't allow the Catalans to speak their mind.
Do you feel as an outsider looking in? Because I, from what I've read over the last few days, getting ready to come here and now meeting you, somebody that's living it from a Western perspective. Mm-hmm. Do you think that the general Spanish, A, don't know, B, also don't really care, and C, wouldn't understand really if they were told, because they're living in a completely different type of Spain than the people who live in Catalan Spain, mm-hmm. that it's a desensitized oppression against a section of their country that's absolutely openly accepted by the government and by the other people in their acquiescence and their silence?
I would agree with that statement 100%.
I think it's like very like Northern Ireland and Ireland.
Yeah.
Where there's a lot of that kind of, there's unspoken stuff and people know there are parts of it that are more oppressed than other parts. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I think it's like an accepted second class citizenry.
Absolutely. And there's a
which
bit,
is never talked about.
Right, right. You never talk about the tension. Mm. The tension is obvious.
Dude, I'm only here like fucking 24 hours and I can feel it already.
Yeah, yeah. You feel it and you see it. You see the independence flag, you see the yellow ribbon, which means that the Catalan is in solidarity with a political leader.
Every menu of every place that we've gone into has it in English, has it in Spanish, and has it in Catalan.
Yeah, they're very proud. They should be.
On every fucking menu, everywhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's a tension that you can feel. Now, the flip side of that is I've also met the Catalans that are not interested in separating from Spain.
Are they young, old?
They are, the younger ones that I've seen are interested in separating because as they see it and it becomes part of their culture, they may not necessarily understand exactly the debate points of why they should separate, but they do talk about like, we want to be independent. Now tell me why. I don't know. But I want to be independent.
You see, they're the easy people. They're the young lads that are sent off to war to fight for their national flags, you know, faith or history or whatever. Like, young people are very easily manipulated by that kind of independent, nationalistic, identitarian, populist types of movement. And you can see that in America. Like, there's a populist movement. I think on both sides. They say Trump is populist. I think Hillary was just as populist. There's just as much of a cult of personality around the identity of being like a Democrat, a liberal, a progressive, as there is in being like a MAGA, American loving, gun-toting, Second Amendment defending, First Amendment defending. You know, there's certain connotations when you wear a red hat, people say you're a racist, and yet how many like black dudes and Hispanic people are coming out and wearing the red hat and going, like, I'm American,
right.
I'm for America. Like, these kind of things, you don't really see such a definite or visible division between Catalonia and Spain.
Right. Yeah.
It's really still, like, under the surface, you know, like a...
Yes, it is.
It's like carbon monoxide racism kind of thing.
Yes, and I think it is about identity and where the Catalans really, because all Catalans speak Spanish.
Yeah, but yeah, not all Spanish speak Catalan.
But not all, oh, absolutely not.
So if they did separate.
Yeah, it'd be totally strange. But let me make a comment on what you touched on, because okay. I really think that it has to do with what we're talking about here, and identity. You brought up the Democrats, you brought up the Republicans in the United States. Both of them are having an identity crisis.
For shizzle.
Because the Democrats are we about, you know, gay rights, about gun control, or are we about the working man? On the other side, you know, are we about only guns and the alt-right? Or are we more of a Reagan-esque type of Republican, where you're more a little more
reinvigorated
moderate.
Economics yeah. and stuff?
And here in Catalonia, it's the same, right? Yeah. And I've mentioned the young. There's an identity problem because they're like, I'm Spanish. I know I'm Spanish. I have a Spanish passport,
uh-huh.
but I also feel this other way, and that play is obvious and. Yeah. That is for
that's
the young
my,
person.
That's my flag, but it just needs a couple of extra stripes.
Exactly. Yeah, get rid of the two big ones on the side.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is fascinating for me to see. And I have, you know, being in school, I see a lot of young kids, or being around schools, I see a lot of young kids that they don't really know why they want to be a separatist.
See, that's the thing. That's what I don't get. There's a lot of people that are MAGA for life.
And don't understand why.
They don't understand why. And there's a lot of people who are like, socialism is the best thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, you know, Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez are the fucking, the business. They're the best ever. And it's like, why? I don't know.
It just feels like that.
Because I get free college or something. Somebody said something. Like, young people are very easily manipulated. And I think they have to arm themselves with the proper information. Or there's going to be trouble down the line. Because they're going to be 30 something. They're going to be after getting sold a fucking lemon.
Right.
And they're going to be standing around with a fucking dick in their hand, going like, you know, what did we vote for? What did we buy? What did we sell ourselves to? That now we can't. Like, how many disaffected people are in their mid 30s now? Because the people who were in their mid 30s during, let's say, the economic crash 2007 and 2008. Mm. were creaming it,
yeah,
and ruined it for everybody 10 years down the line. So those people are coming up that were 20 when it happened, they're now 30,
yeah,
with a kid, yeah, possibly a couple, like an all right job, and 20 years ago would have definitely been able to afford a house and a car and all the nice things, and now they can barely afford to rent a place.
Right, right.
Like, there's something wrong, and that's like our westernized view of society. There's that in Spain too.
Absolutely.
And also a cultural language, geographical, political elements to it too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely, there is.
Is it like? I know I don't want to get too much into it, but like, you know, the Dreamers, like the DACA kids who were born in America. Mm-hmm. In my view, I mean, I know it's probably a lot of people would disagree. Like, if you have two parents that came from Mexico or Guatemala,
mm-hmm.
and they were living in America for 10 years, and then they had you in America.
Right.
And then you lived until you're like 20,
right,
in America, right, and your parents are, but they were like not fully legal. Like, you have contributed to society, you've been educated in American school, you've paid taxes, you've done what you've done. Maybe not too, if you're only 20, you haven't paid that many taxes, but you have participated in everything that would denote the culture and or national identity of an American.
Right.
I think you absolutely should be afforded the choice to choose to take an American citizenry and be allowed to have it and continue on from there. Maybe not like taking nine uncles and fuck, all we need is, you know, Juan to get the American passport, mm-hmm. and then we all become legal and then everyone just piles on Juan's passport. Like, obviously that's a bit stretch too far.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've done your time, you should get what you deserve.
Well,
the Catalonians are the DACA kids of Spain. They have all the Spanish culture, they have all of that stuff, and yet they're not afforded the same benefits and the same, you know, pure identity kudos right. that a Spanish person will be afforded.
It's very interesting to see. Let me make a comment on the DACA thing. By the way, when a kid is born in the States, they are a citizen. Unfortunately, they give a very negative name called the anchor baby.
Anchor baby,
because that baby anchors a family to there, and through that process of becoming a citizen, you can eventually sponsor your parents, and mostly that's what why they're so mad about it. I've been to the through the process of my wife becoming an American citizen, and there is a reason why those people don't go through the process of becoming a citizen.
It's bullshit.
It's crazy.
I'm trying to get a visa to get to go to America. To film a few documentaries, to work there. It's a complicated process. Talking a couple of hundred pages, so many documents and quizzes and interviews and tens of thousands of dollars. And that's just from an Irish guy who wants to go there temporarily to make documentaries, to come home and work on those documentaries and make a TV show from Ireland.
So what's
imagine how hard it is to live there.
Oh my gosh, it's crazy. And those same DACA kids that you're talking about have never returned back to their parents' home country, because if they leave the country, they have a problem back getting in.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's very complicated. So yes, the Catalan kids are very Spanish. The Catalan kids are, that's their second language in schools. So there is an identity crisis with them, and how they're going to deal with that, I don't know. We'll see in a generation what happens. The economic situation has not really become better. I actually believe that this is the new normal. You know, what's going to happen to those kids? What's going to happen to
Europe
those guys?
Europe is failing its youth. The European Union.
Especially because we're looking at the unemployment rate here in Spain. The unemployment rate is crazy high, but it's higher proportionately to the kids.
25 and under.
Yeah. And how do you teach
a lot of countries like that.
How do you teach those kids to go work and work hard without having the government say, hey, well, you know, it's okay. You're at this age. We're going to give you some money.
But you're not teaching them an example of, like, fastidiousness or like, stay in power. You if you practice at something, you might not get paid for like the first 3-4 years you're doing it. Dude, we're doing podcasting. Like, you knew when you started off doing this tour guide and shit. Yeah. Like, it doesn't pay you straight out the gate.
Absolutely not.
You're
absolutely
putting your arse in that chair every day for 3 years and not taking any paycheck. Like, it's very hard to teach a young person that that's what you have to do when everything is so immediate. Now we're getting like two outlads now. When I was young. But it just, with all of those other, like a pancake stack of cultural, geographical, financial, political, identitarian, nationalistic, even historical layers of oppression and shittiness and, you know, disparate separateness. Like, Catalonia has not had an easy time.
Oh, absolutely not.
And the youth are revolting.
And they are. But then here's the interesting part of that argument. Let's say that Catalonia would be able to gain their independence.
Sure, and we're going to talk about that now, I guess, right?
I guess we can. But let's say that it did happen. Mm-hmm. Some crazy thing happened, and Spain says, you know what, we're going to let that cash cow go. You guys have gained your independence. Mm. Your points are valid. There you go.
The old ports of Aragon, right?
Yes. What are you going to do now? What are you going to get a passport? How are you going to get into the EU?
Do they not automatically get access to the EU?
I don't know.
And the common market? Would that not be kind of like the Brexit backstop? Is that not the...
I wish I had a better answer, because the truth is no one knows. So the argument is, and the Catalans will tell you they don't know, but what they want first is independence for those that want to separate.
Yeah, but that's like, you know, a guy getting out of jail. It's like, where are you going to stay tonight? I don't know. Or a guy getting out of a fucking mental institution. Like, have you got a place to go? Nope. And then you end up on Skid Row.
Yeah.
And you're fucking, you know.
Because it's not something you can go back, right? No. You're like, wait, hold on one sec. I don't like this.
Yeah.
I don't like this. I don't like the fact that we've separated and I can do this and I can do this and I can do this. I got everything I wanted, but we financially can't do it because we didn't know how to do it.
Look at the shitstorm Brexit is. I'm not getting into Brexit talk, but look what Brexit has done to the British and to Europe. Like, it's a fucking nightmare for the people in it, for Irish people who are doing business across what could be now a hard border. Like, it's fucking like crazy. But at the same time, I fully understand it, because the EU is fucking up on people, man. It's taken, it's been given for a really long time now. It's taken, but it's taken from the wrong people.
Right. Yeah.
And I always thought that, you know, in World War One, it was trench warfare, and we were fighting over feet. In World War Two, they were going in, getting Lebensraum and moving into Germans. And with the creation of the EU and the adoption of all these other countries, the Germans just stayed where they were, but they had the benefits of everything all around them being sent to them anyway.
Yeah.
Like, the Germans are the fucking kings of the EU. Like, and that's it, you know?
And why would they want to devalue a euro when they're doing just fine?
Yeah.
It's like, Italy, euro? Wait, I'm sorry, guys. We're not going to devalue it. Greece, yeah. Good luck, guys. You have beautiful islands. Keep working on that tourism. Hey, Spain, you guys got some jamón serrano. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But we're not going to devalue it.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. I don't know. You start thinking, questioning everything, right?
Mm. And especially because Spain got free of this, like, national socialist, like, agenda only in the late 70s and became its own thing and started to discover itself in a capitalist EU.
Yeah.
Like, Spain has always been on the lower end of the spectrum when it comes to income and expenditure compared to even Portugal, or compared definitely to Italy, which is massively wealthy, France, which is like huge industrial production. It'd be more akin to like the budgets of like Wales. Yeah. And it's got like four times the amount of people.
Yeah. So I
how is Spain so poor when it has so much stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of an anomaly here in Barcelona to see how much richness there is here because it is an opulent place. It is pretty cool.
Fucking class.
Man, it's pretty darn nice. But the funny thing is, you go 15 miles
outside
of Barcelona, it's a different reality. Yeah. You know,
we drove through it, man. It looks like those old fucking Shane.
Yeah,
it's like an old Western movie. Like, there are those like the sleepy dude with the big hat sitting outside the thing going like, "Hola, señor." Like,
absolutely.
It's no joke. You're into the city center and it's all high rises and there's a fucking butt plug like dildo looking building across the way and the mountain with the castle and all the lights and then.
You go to the other side of that mountain range.
It's like Watland Daub huts shit.
Man, you have no.
We drove through it today on the way in here.
It's jarring. You're like, wait, hold on. Once I was just in. Why are you got? This is horrible.
And then everything that's in developed countries that's like, you know, you go buy a coffee and it's like $4.50 or whatever. Right, yeah. Here it's like 70 cents.
Yeah.
You get a bottle of water, it's less than a euro.
Wow, yeah.
Like, all of the essentials are super low priced.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's funny, Americans are starting to see that.
Yeah.
A lot of them will migrate to Costa Rica and Central America.
Yeah.
And now they're starting to see that, hey, Spain's pretty cheap. It's really cheap. Here recently, there was a city that was up for sale. They're like, you get the whole city. We don't have anyone here.
Like an Airbnb thing?
No. The city was actually, someone said, we have an abandoned city.
Fuck.
And we need to find someone to come back and populate it. And so this is happening. And
three Mormon dudes are like, man, we've got like 45 wives between us. Let's do it.
Let's go.
Let's fill this motherfucker up for the blonde babies.
So I you know, it is really, all these things, everything that we talked about, they all play on themselves, and it's very interesting just to be here and just as an outsider come back and see it, take it in, understand it, turn it around, make sense of it, and translate that to somebody else. For me, has become a really fun game to play.
Yeah.
Because I get the Catalan perspective, and I translate that into an American or English speaking a person from an English speaking country, and kind of tell them what's going on, and they're amazed at what happens.
It is a cultural Rosetta Stone. I think it's definitely something that if people are going on holidays, like, I feel I never wanted to go on a holiday where you just go and you eat, drink, sleep, and fuck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go to the pub and you get smashed and you wake up at the crack of noon and you eat a lot of carbs and then you lie by the pool half fucked.
Yeah.
And then at 5 o'clock you start putting alcohol in again slowly and build your way back up and then just repeat for 7 days and then
come back home.
And you need a holiday from your holiday.
Yeah.
Like, I've never been into that.
Yeah.
Ever. I've always been like, hey, I need to spend a month in this place to see what it's really like. And you could spend a month here in Catalonia. Like, it's definitely on my list for coming back to make a big documentary, and especially about the massive corruption of the Spanish government during the quote unquote illegal referendum that went on in 2017, which is one of the things that I wanted to film here, but unfortunately the people are not available at such short notice or in such a short time to cover that story. But it's something that's celebrated annually as an anniversary. There's one coming up in 2019 as well. And they're out there beating drums and talking about some shit. For those that hadn't seen it, Catalonia wanted to vote in a referendum of the citizens of the area, of the principality, to secede from the Spanish government. And the Spanish said,
well, it was,
that shit is illegal.
Yeah, so October 1st, 2017, it was a referendum, and the Catalans just wanted to see, it was kind of a litmus test. Where are we really? Are we going to secede or not? Because it was just
like a Brexit vote.
It was just, it wasn't official. There wasn't any official anything about it. But it ended up exploding into something so unnecessary, so crazy. And it really kind of drew a line, and you figured out what the Catalans are really up against. It was really scary for me that morning because my wife and I woke up and we saw the federal police driving up and down the streets, and they would go in clusters of three or four.
And were they in like armored cars?
Armored cars, absolutely.
And they had the whole like stormtrooper black fucking riot gear and all
and
that
with
shit.
Their M16s, and I mean it was intense. They had a ship out in the port.
Shades of Franco,
and that's what people. That's actually the funniest photo poster I saw. It had a picture of Franco, and it says, "Don't vote."
Yeah, man.
And but
that's
yeah.
not that long ago. That's like fucking 40 years, 30 years
74,
ago.
74, yeah. So the feds were, for lack of a better word, the feds were hanging out in the ship, out on the port, and that's where they had all their armored vehicles. They had them on a ship.
Ready to invade.
Ready to go on and patrol the streets. And so we woke up. There were polling places all over the city. People knew where to go. Channel 3, a very predominant Catalan, pro-Catalan, a TV station here had reporters all over the place. So we got up, we went to a polling station, which was right around the corner from our house, and there was a very long line. We call it the cola. So we asked, hey, is
what
this the cola?
Called?
The cola, which is the cola of a dog is a tail. So it's the tail of the line. So you always ask, hey, is it the cola? Is this the cola?
Not to be confused with culo, which is just under the tail.
Just right under.
Yeah.
Very close, same vicinity, but just not quite.
How do you say taint in Spanish?
Is more tamed?
Taint.
Taint, oh.
Taint the tail, taint the butt.
I don't know. I have to look that one up. Yeah. I think that's a name. Either way, so we went up there and they showed up with the kids. We had our two kids and we showed up and people noticed that we were with the kids. And all of a sudden there was a person that asked us to come up to the front. And so they pushed us ahead of the cola and they had us go in and vote immediately.
No way.
And she was explaining, she's like, look, you guys have kids with you.
Some shit's gonna go down.
Exactly.
Fuck off.
You get to get in there, you get a vote, and you get your kids out of here.
Fuck off, man. Really?
Dude, it gives me chills right now thinking about it, because...
How old are the kids?
At the time, my kids were 4 and 2.
That is fucked up, dude.
So, we get up to the front of the line, we go in, we vote. They wouldn't let me vote with my Texas driver's license. Go figure. So, we went in, we voted, we left, we walked out. And fortunately, for that specific polling location, there was no violence. But then you go home, you turn on Channel 3... you were seeing violence taking place.
There's a fucking 24-minute compilation on YouTube of all of the news footage. You know that old white-haired woman that had the bob?
Yeah.
That got her fucking, her, what's it called? Her eye socket all smashed in.
Yeah.
The dude who got shot in the eye with a plastic bullet and he's blind.
Yeah.
Like, 24-minute compilation I watched today of atrocities that you could... put in black and white and say it was the fucking 50s.
Yeah.
Like it was bananas.
Or in this case, 1936.
Yeah.
Spanish Civil War. Yeah, it was very disheartening for me to go through that process and see. Now, again, as an American perspective, my blood boiled. How can I be in a country, in a place that I love so much and I've grown to love so much and claim to be a democracy when I see people being beaten, when I see people being stomped on just because they wanted to express themselves? There was nothing legal about that. There was nothing legally binding, I should say.
Yes.
There was nothing legally
binding.
There was
not illegal in their actions. Yeah.
It was not.
It needed to be policed. Like.
But Madrid saw it differently, and that's why they had these people here.
That's fucking crazy. So, like, in you've heard of the California secession movement, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So California have done those polls and all, and, like, they're arguably the richest state in the United States.
Well, if they were their own country, they would have a pretty strong economy. Yes.
Yeah. Texas, similar, but not, like, economically, but, like, definitely in population and in self-sustainability.
Correct.
New York... maybe not so, but that's like probably the third richest per capita.
But no, California definitely has it.
California
has
done.
Me to say that as a Texan, but it's okay.
They have California have done their market research, and if they wanted to vote like in 6 months' time, they could throw it up now and be out, no problem. And there's nobody out there like baiting them and kicking the shit out of them. Like I can't express the gravity in watching those videos where there's national Spanish police in stormtrooper outfits with cattle prods, with batons, with the butts of guns, and under like not gunfire, but the threat of gunfire. Like they're pointing live rounds in a loaded gun at people saying, get back, and all they're going in is doing like a straw poll about a referendum of Catalonia seceding from Spain. Like that is fucking insane.
It is fucking insane.
And it was buried in the news. Like it was in the news, a day, 2 days maybe, and it was like, something else happened. And a year later, they had a big festival. Now, it's going to be a yearly thing, like in memoriam of that, on the 1st of October every year. And it's going to be like drums beating, everybody's having, you know, going like, don't forget this shit. And they have their martyrs. They have the people who got injured in the last one. And
Well, not to mention, I mean, the obvious ones are the political prisoners that are still in jail.
Right.
And two exiles that are outside of the country now. And so...
that can never return for fear of their safety.
Sure. Right? One of them is now a congressman in the EU, in the EU Congress.
That's crazy, man.
Shooting senator. It is crazy. And he cannot return, even as a senator in the EU Congress.
Diplomatic immunity.
Nope.
Revoked.
Nope.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So where are we? Where is Catalonia on the cessation plan? Like, is there ever going to be another referendum? Is there any politicians that represent the area that can put it to the national government? Like, there has been a massive shakeup since that, though, right?
Yeah, there has. But I think they're kind of replanning, regrouping. They realized, because, you know, as a Texan, it's really easy for me to say, that shit would never happen there, right? Because we've got guns, and if I really want independence, I'm going to go fight for it. I don't really want to go that far, but the Catalans are very adamant about being a peaceful separation. They don't want violence.
Sure, but do you think if all those Catalonians who were bared down on by the police had guns as their culture, do you not think they would have fired back that day?
Right, I don't know.
Because they did in 36, they did in 47, they did in 51.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
We talk about in Ireland like Sunday Bloody Sunday. We talk about these. There was like three or four different Sundays where English army and police open fire on citizens and kill people. Like
I don't know.
That shit wouldn't happen in Texas because motherfucking Texans would shoot back. Like is why the thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if Catalonians had it, maybe
what would happen? I don't know. But I think for the most part there are you can't say that it wouldn't happen because there's always a few that would say, yes, I would go to war for Catalonia.
Like
I
have Basque a friend who has ETA, like which is like an IRA.
And that's kind of no longer...
Yeah, but I mean, up until like maybe the early, mid-90s, they wanted to be separate. They wanted to have... And they've kind of calmed down a little bit now.
Yeah, but it was violent. It was bloody.
It was bombings. It was terrorism.
It was really bad.
So,
but the Catalans are, as a whole don't want violence. There are a few that do, and I feel they would have fought back that day.
Yeah, I think because it's so close. 2017 is not that long ago.
And it's still fresh in everyone's mind.
Yeah, and there's an anniversary coming up in October.
Yeah,
I mean, it's still obviously in the zeitgeist. Like people still think about it. They want to secede, they want to be able to be independent. The need and want was obviously there because people came out to vote. Like if you were voting to stay in Spain, you probably didn't leave your house that day.
Correct.
The people who left were
right.
They were leavers. Yeah, they wanted to leave.
The ones that want the move to secede, obviously, are the loudest.
Yes.
Because I've met people who aren't interested in separating, and I've asked them to be on the podcast because for my podcast, I'm working on a story of this issue.
Yes.
And I have found easily someone who speaks English and can talk about their perspective on the debate of separating.
Brilliant. I'd love to talk to them myself.
I have found people who speak English but refuse to go on a podcast, go on camera, be recorded.
For their safety.
They claim their safety, which I don't think.
Okay.
It could be true. But they're claiming, first, for their safety, and second, that it's too much of a hotbed. I don't want to ruin myself politically. I don't want to ruin my job. Excuse me, not politically, but I don't want to ruin my job. Yeah. I don't want to ruin who I am because I don't want any backlash. So I found them. They don't want to go on the record. Easily, I found the separatists, many of them, that would say, I'll go on the record. I'll talk about it. I'll do it in whatever language you want. They're adamant about it. So it's amazing. It's crazy. And I live here and I see it and I notice these little things all over the place. You put a Spanish flag, someone hangs a Spanish flag up, as you've noticed, as you've been here, people hang flags and, you know, stating who they want and what side they're on. And you'll see a Spanish flag hanging every once in a while. And someone is making another reference to them. If they live close to them, they'll put up an independence flag. And this is consistent all the way through.
It's
fascinating.
But it's real, like, low-key, right?
Yeah.
So the Spanish government has been shaken up since. We've got former leaders in jail. There's been people, like, chastised for that incident.
Yeah, yes, yes.
Do you think Anthony will kick off this October?
I think they're going to have a some type of, they call it, manifestation here. Yeah. There will be some type of a protest. Absolutely, there will be. If nothing else, a remembrance to keep it fresh in people's mind.
Yeah, yeah,
saying, hey, you know what? This has happened. Don't forget. Remember what we're trying to do here. I experienced one a couple of years ago. A friend of mine, Jason, was visiting from the States, and he called me up. Actually, it was a surprise. I wasn't expecting him. And he called me up. He said, hey, man, I'm here in Barcelona. I know, you know, I'm just letting you know, but can I come over? I'm like, yeah, sure. Actually, Jason, you're going to love tonight. Come over. There's going to be a manifestation in front of our house. So what usually would have taken him probably about 20 minutes to get here took him almost an hour and a half, 2 hours to get through the crowd of people that had gathered in the area. He finally made it to our apartment, and we went up to the top of our apartment building and watched the manifestation or the protest from atop the building. And we could see from my place all the way down to the Sagrada Familia people. It turned out that about 850 people were there for that manifestation and that protest.
Yeah, so it's still, like, they didn't go away after they got bet down. They're still there.
If nothing else, it has galvanized them and to make them think, we truly have something here. We truly have to fight this oppressive government.
So watch this space.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. I think we might, like, it was very, very difficult. It was very easy for me to find you online. Yeah. It's very difficult for me to find these people, but possibly through you, we'd be able to get to some of these guys.
I can make that happen.
We can come back in October and we'll get some cameras and we get some microphones and we'll see something. Because, like, I think it's very important to see it happening in our own time.
Absolutely.
Something like this.
I think it's important for democracy's sake.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, we're fortunate enough to come from countries where democracy is, for the most part, pretty stable. Don't want to make too much of a comment about the United States right now, but we're fortunate to come from that, if nothing else, heritage, and to see it possibly being challenged is very scary for us. Mm. It's scary for me. Mm. So when I see it happen, I'm absolutely engaged. I'm in 100%. And I'm going to translate as much as what I experience here to other people, so they have a better understanding of what's going on here as well.
Yeah, it's a needed service.
Absolutely,
cool. I do think so. Tell us one more time before we go down about your podcast, so people can find it.
The podcast can be found, or is called, Uncommon Tourist, and you can find us at uncommontourist.com, wherever you find your podcast. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and drop in if you want to. If you're in Barcelona, stop by, say hello, let's do a tour. If not, send me a message over the podcast. Give me your ideas, because there are a lot, and I don't know them all. So if you think of something as you're listening to this, like, hey, I was there one time, and I thought of this. Do you have anything on that? I'd love to hear it, because I'll do a story on it.
Over the last few years, my list has got so much bigger from people going, hey, man, did you ever hear about this thing? I'm like, no.
Yes.
Send me that thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, so I'm going to put all those links in the description of the show below. So if you want to get on with Alvaro and see what's going on with the Uncommon Tourist, we'll put everything below to make it nice and easy for your clicky fingers. I am Gordo from Those Conspiracy Guys, for those that are listening from the other side. The rest of you, y'all know me. And if you want to reach out about anything that we talked about in this episode or about other episodes, just make a comment, ask a question, anything you like. info@thoseconspiracyguys.com is the email address. We're on all the different social media. Anything that says social media, we're fucking on it. And this is going out publicly to everybody, but it goes out first to the lovely people at Patreon. So patreon.com/dustconspiracyguys if you want to support the show. You get all the season one episodes, you get outtakes, you get behind the scenes videos. You'll be getting the videos from this European tour that we're on right now, and loads of extra content if you're a TCG fan and you want some more in your ear holes and eye holes. We also are doing a live show in London on the 6th of October. So if you want to head to the link in the description below to get tickets for that, it's going to be on in Bush Hall for all you London tanners. If you want to come down and have a bit of gas, a bit of banter, it's in Bush Hall. There are limited tickets now at the release of this episode, so get on it quick before they're gone. And we're also performing at the Cork Podcast Festival on the 11th, 12th and 13th of October that weekend. The tickets will be in the description below as well, and there's loads of great acts in Cork, so if you're anywhere in Ireland and you want to make a weekend of it, there's loads of hotel space and everything on the website. You'll be able to get somewhere nice to stay and find a few bits and bobs. There's my dad wrote a porno, and Blind Boy from the Rubber Bandits are down there, and there's loads of great podcasts coming into that festival, including those conspiracy guys. All it leaves me to do is very close to 2 a.m. here in Barcelona, which in real time, because we're hours ahead, it could be 1 or it could be 3. I'm not sure anymore.
Right.
But I just want to say thanks so much to Alvaro for joining me here, having the chats. We talked about some great stuff before we pressed record as well, and hopefully that'll turn into something. And we'll definitely be back to have more chats and maybe go on a real life tour with you.
Thank you, Gordo. I really can't thank you enough.
No bother, man.
I think I've made a new friend, and I really appreciate you finding me randomly on
well, it wasn't random. That Google machine does its work, you know.
But I really appreciate it, and I look forward to future conversations. Thank you
absolutely
so much.
Absolutely, dude. Everybody go listen to Uncommon Tourist and have a go now that there's episodes out. And that's it for this Swapcast. I hope you learned something about Catalonia. I definitely did. And I've done my research over the last couple of days trying to swat up for this. But there's so much more to find out about, and we will do that together. That's it for this episode of Those Conspiracy Guys. I'm Gordo.
I'm Alvaro.
And we'll see you again.
Adeo.
Adeo.
Adeo.